How do you do? This is Clive Brooks. Why do so many good girls fall in love with so many bad men? History is full of them. Crime is full of them. I'm not thinking of such men as Joseph Smith, you remember, who made love to rather aging ladies, gave them a bath, and then murdered them. No, I'm thinking of scoundrels who succeed with really young and attractive women. You know, I've come to a conclusion that it's a question of approach. The average young fellow falls in love with a girl and just hopes that she cares for him. But the scoundrel selects his victim, plans a campaign, and sets about it deliberately. That's it, the approach. These are many and various. There's the obvious one we all know, the misunderstood husband approach. Then there's the I'm so lonely approach. And then I want someone to confide in and help me approach. Also the you're so lovely approach. Strangely enough, most effective with plain women. And then the Tarzan approach. Dangerous, but attractive, I believe. I call this week's Casebook History A Lesson in Love. And it is the story of Kitty Byron, age 23, and of enchanting appearance. Early in 1902, she was working in a millinery establishment in London. To the shop one spring evening came a gentleman. Well, at any rate, he wore a silk hat and a frock coat, who appeared to be of some importance in the city.
Good afternoon, sir. May I be of assistance?
Yes, you may indeed. My name's Baker, Arthur Reginald Baker.
Oh, yes, Mr. Baker.
I understand you're making a hat for my wife. I've called to collect it. Is it ready yet?
Oh, yes, sir. As a matter of fact, I was just putting the finishing touches to it as you came in.
Splendid.
May I
see it?
Certainly, sir. That's it.
Charming.
I don't know whether Mrs. Baker will quite approve of so many daisies.
Oh, I'm sure she will.
Still, if she doesn't, she can always bring them back and I'll take some off.
Well, I'm afraid that wouldn't be possible. You see, she leaves tomorrow for the west of England to visit her parents.
Oh, well, then perhaps you could bring it back, sir.
Oh, I don't imagine it'll be necessary. Still, one never knows. I've long since given up trying to anticipate the whims and fancies of the opposite sex.
Oh, you do it wrong, sir.
I believe that, my dear young lady, when it's demonstrated. If I do return with it and you're not in the shop, who's I ask for?
Well, I'm Miss Byron, sir.
No relation to the poet?
Not that I know of.
Well, you could be well be one of his heroines, nevertheless. Thank you, Miss Byron. The account will be sent in due course, I've no doubt.
Oh, yes, sir.
Splendid. Hello.
And that, so Kitty Byron thought, was that. But it wasn't. After this first meeting, Reginald found himself recalling Kitty's delectable charms and felt impelled to seek her again. But this time, being the scoundrel he was, with a properly planned campaign. You'll recognize it. It's the I want someone to confide in and help me approach. And so, a week later, at closing time, as Kitty locked the front door and stepped into the street.
Good evening, Miss Byron.
Oh, why, it's Mr.
Baker.
Yes, of course.
I called about a week ago to collect a hat for my wife.
Yes, I remember quite well. So there weren't too many babies after all. I thought there might be. Now, if you just wait till I reopen the shop.
On the contrary, Miss Byron, the hat was a great success. My wife was in the train.
Well, then, why are you here?
See you.
Me?
Yes.
But, I don't understand.
Miss Byron, I flatter myself I'm a good judge of human character. One has to be to succeed on the stock exchange, you know. And the moment I met you, I realized just what sort of a person you were. Warm-hearted, sympathetic, generous, and intelligent.
You overestimate my qualities, Mr. Baker.
Oh, not at all. I go so far as to say you could help me very considerably if you were willing. Very considerably indeed.
Help you? How?
I'm in desperate need of advice, and I've no one else to turn to. Oh, I know that must sound strange, a man like myself, business connections and so on, but you see, all my friends are men, and their viewpoint's no different from my own, and that wouldn't help me in the least. And so, I've come to you.
Well, I'm afraid that I...
No, please don't refuse me. Please, I beg of you. You could do so much, I'm sure you could. Tell me, you're engaged this evening?
Why, no, but...
Splendid. Then at least you won't begrudge me half an hour, eh?
Well,
there's a little pub along the street. It's cozy and quiet. Suppose we go there.
I don't drink, Mr. Baker.
Oh. Well, I touch liquor myself, as a matter of fact. Then let's have some tea, shall we? It's much more pleasant.
Well, I'm not very sure that I...
Please, Miss Byron.
Oh. Well, all right, then. But only for half an hour, mind.
Thank you, my dear. Very kind.
There can be no doubt about it. Kitty Byron was flattered and impressed. After all, what harm could come from having a cup of tea? Besides, he was such a gentleman. Charming manners, silk hat, frock coat, and he seemed so sad. Well, that's how he appeared to Kitty. To me, he sounds and looks like an infernal scoundrel. We had it as may. A few minutes later, found them sitting opposite each other in the corner of a cafe in Oxford Street, and Reginald gallantly pouring out tea, and incidentally pouring out his own pet version of the story of his life. This version portrayed Reginald as a sadly misunderstood husband, patient and long-suffering. There were tears in the eyes of both when at last it was over.
How could she have done such a thing?
Well, it's all account of this wretched woman I told you about.
The woman met at the dinner party?
Yes. How was I to know I'd be put next to her? Was it my fault she ignored the man and on her left all night and thought all the while to me? And afterwards, when she suggested it might be cool on the terrace, I couldn't very well refuse to go with her, could I?
Of course not.
And then meeting her again by chance in the city the following week. And then being seen by some kind friend who immediately rushed back to my wife with the news. That's what caused the damage, of course.
Oh, but surely you could have explained everything.
My dear girl, I tried to.
And your wife wouldn't listen?
Oh, she listened all right. Nothing I said made any difference. I'm afraid she's a very obstinate woman. So the next day she packed her clothes, and the day after that she left.
Well, why don't you go after her and have her anything out?
Well, it wouldn't help, I'm quite sure.
Yes, but surely...
No, I know her too well. It'd only make things worse.
Well, let's hope that when she's had time to think it over, she'll realize how foolish she's been and come back.
Let's hope so, certainly.
Well, but she will sooner or later, won't she?
I don't know. I have a feeling she's left me for good.
Oh, the whole thing's just too absurd. If she'd done anything wrong, it might have been different.
Exactly. I knew, see, from my point of view. You're a very sympathetic person, Miss Byron.
Oh, I'm afraid I've not been very helpful.
Oh, but you have. If you only knew what a relief it is to be able to talk it over with someone who understands. You could help me even more, if you would.
How?
Well... You see, now I'm on my own, I get lonely. I'm sometimes so desperately lonely that I feel like... I like ending it all.
Hmm.
Yes, after all, what's there left to live for? What's the point in going on?
Oh, Mr. Baker, you mustn't think of such things. You must think of nothing.
I try not to. I know it's foolish, but... Well, if only I had someone to talk to. Someone I knew I could count as a friend. Miss Byron... Do you think it'd be asking too much if... Well, what I mean is, could I see you just now and then? Please. It'd be more to me than you can guess.
Well, I shouldn't, I know, but if you really feel you need someone...
Thank you, my dear. I shall never forget your kindness. Never.
Nice work. Nice work indeed, Mr. Baker. You've used nearly all the well-known approaches. I'm so lonely approach, and even the threat of suicide approach. Poor Kitty Barron. I'm afraid she's hooked. A few more weeks, during which everything went according to plan, Reginald's plan, and the inevitable happened. With an air of triumph which he took no trouble to conceal, Reginald rang the doorbell of a house in Duke Street, Portman Square, and a couple of minutes later, the landlady, a Mrs. Laird, was showing the couple over a vacant apartment.
Oh, it's charming, isn't it, Reginald?
Yes, indeed. Very comfortable, I must say. What do you think, my dear?
Oh, I think we should take it.
You do? Lovely.
Oh, I'm so pleased. I'm sure I shall love having you.
When would it be convenient for us to move in, Mrs. Laird?
Oh, any time you like, sir.
Tomorrow? We could manage that, couldn't we, dear?
Oh, yes, I think so.
Well, tomorrow it shall be, then. Rent in advance, of course. I'll write you out a check at once, Mrs. Dale.
Oh, you don't have to worry about that, sir. By the way, I do hope you'll forgive me, but I don't think I quite caught your name.
Baker. Mr. and Mrs. Baker.
Oh, yes, of course. How silly of me. Mr. and Mrs. Baker.
And so the little milliner's assistant threw up her job and became the wife of the city stockbroker. For a while, it seemed that her gamble for happiness had succeeded. Every morning, promptly at 9:30, Mr. Baker went off in his silk hat and frock coat. And every evening, promptly at 6, he returned. And if he brought home with him sometimes an alcoholic aura, he usually brought flowers as well. But for Kitty, the process of disillusionment was slow. And it wasn't until one day in the autumn that she began to realize that she mightn't have made such a good bargain after all.
Come in. Oh, James, Lord.
Oh, sorry to trouble you, dearie, but I just thought you ought to know.
Know what?
Well, that check your husband gave me for this month's rent, it's... come back from the bank.
Oh, but there must be some mistake.
No mistake, dearie. Here it is. It's got the first draw marked on it. See?
Oh, I can't imagine how such a thing could have happened. Reggie must surely have miscalculated his balance or something.
Seems to me he's always miscalculating it.
What do you mean?
Well, this is the third one that's come back.
Oh, no.
Yes, I haven't mentioned to him before. I don't want to worry you, but these things have happened to other people, too.
Other people?
Yes. A grocer, for instance, and a butcher. It's getting to be quite a subject of conversation around these parts. I want to be the one to make trouble, dearie, but your husband represented himself to me as a gentleman of affluence.
And so he is.
Well, then why do his checks keep coming back? I'm not a rich woman, Mrs. Baker, and I need this money.
Yes, of course. I'm sure I have it, I promise. If my husband is financially embarrassed, which I don't believe for a moment, mind you, well, you can rest assured it's only temporary.
It better be. That's all I've got to say. It better be.
That evening, when Baker got home, the alcoholic aura that accompanied him might better be described as a fog. Diffidently, but with resolution, Kitty broached the subject of the check.
Returns, you say?
Nonsense.
Well, old Harrington downstairs is making you all out to get money out of me.
No, Reggie, Mrs. Laird's not that kind of thing.
Mrs. Laird's an old toad, a robber and a reprobate.
Shh, quiet, dear, she'll hear you.
I don't care. I don't care if everyone hears me. Let's open the window and tell the whole world. Our landlady's a cheat and a fraud.
Oh, Reggie, how could you? I tell you, the check was returned. I said myself.
Oh, you did you? Prying into my personal affairs, eh?
No, of course not. Mrs. Laird brought it up and showed it to me.
So you're both in this together. It's a conspiracy against me. That's what it is. Women. Women. You're all against me, all of you. It's easy. It's always the same.
Reggie, dear, you're not well. Why don't you lie down?
Don't want to lie down. Who says I'm not well? You think I'm drunk, don't you?
No, of course
well,
not.
Well, I am. Why shouldn't I be? It's a free country, isn't it?
Oh, Reggie, please.
Oh, leave me alone. Take your hands off me. You know something? I'm just getting a little bit tired of you. You're too goody-goody. That's what's the matter with you. Why can't you be more like Betty?
Betty who?
Betty, the barmaid at the Tyler's Arms. Now, there's a girl for you. She's got spirit. I like a bit of spirit in the drinks and in the women. That's rather good. Let's remember that. See you later.
Where are you going?
Out.
Where's the water?
What's it to do with you? Why can't you mind your own business just for a change?
Reggie!
That's right. Weep, Kitty Byron, for well you may. Of course, next morning there'll be apologies and protestations of undying love and promises that it won't happen again. But it will happen again and again and again. And what's to be the outcome of it all? Where is it going to end? Baron. Then one day, early in November, she had a visitor. A quiet, sad-eyed woman of 35 or so.
So you're Kitty Baron?
Well, yes, it's strange to see you. Nothing like I pictured you at all.
Well, you're hardly more than a child.
I'm 23.
I'm a guest 3 years younger at least.
Well, I hope this doesn't sound rude, but what's it got to do with you anyway?
After all, my dear, surely it's understandable that I should be interested in my husband's affairs.
Your husband? Well, you are Mrs. Baker.
Yes, of course. Didn't you guess?
I'm afraid I didn't.
I'm so sorry. I should have explained.
What do you want? Why are you here?
My dear girl, Reg has managed to ruin my life very effectively. I shouldn't like him to do the same to yours.
Surely the circumstances are a little different.
The circumstances may be, but I warrant Reg is just the same as he ever was. I had 12 years of him. I know him through and through. Has he been drinking much lately?
You've gone too far.
Yes, I thought he might have been. He could never keep off it for more than a couple of months at a time. Does he abuse you and call you vile names when he comes home drunk?
I won't listen to you. He never struck you?
No. See you, my dear, all in good time. He threw a chair at me once. That's why I decided to leave him. I should have done it years ago.
Will you go now, Kay?
And how about those worthless checks? Does he still use them to pay his bills?
I've asked you to leave, Mrs. Baker.
Certainly, my dear, if that's how you feel about it. I'm sorry you're taking it this way, but I think I understand. You're still in love with him, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, am I. It's a pity of it. So am I.
Goodbye, Miss Barham.
Mr. Poppins needs to inform. Days passed, matters went from bad to worse. Baker now was making no attempt at all to hide his true character. Almost every night he came home drunk, and the more Kitty pleaded with him, the more difficult he became. Then, one night early in November...
Let's look for new lodgings tomorrow.
Who says so?
Mrs. Lord. She told me today we'd have to go.
What's wrong with the old trout now? What have we done to offend her this time?
That last check you gave her. It's come back again.
Oh, is that all? I thought it was something serious.
Oh, Reggie, why do you do it?
Why do I do what?
Write checks when you know there's no money in the bank to meet them.
Oh, so you're going to start that all over again, are you? Can a man ever have a bit of peace in his own home?
Please don't be angry with me, Reggie.
Angry? Why shouldn't I be angry? From the moment I get in, it's nothing but nag, nag, nag all the time. Anybody would think you were my wife instead of...
Reggie!
Oh, yes, isn't it? They might hear the truth about yourself, do you?
I'm what you've made me.
That's right. Throw it all on to me. Thought I was quite a catch, didn't you? You with your downcast eyes and your demure manner. Thought you'd fooled me properly. Why, you cheap little...
Stop it! But I'm glad you say you're
such... I'll say what I like, understand? Why did I ever fall for such a silly, simpering little thing?
Reggie, I can't bear it when you talk to me like that.
Well, I think, get out! Get out! No one's asking you to stay.
You can't mean that.
Pack your things and go. Get out of my...
Oh, please.
Let me go. You know how I hate being...
Don't you listen to me.
Let me go, I said.
You struck me.
Oh, for the love of heaven, now there's tears. Well, if you won't go, I will.
Get go. Get out. Come on, get out. I hope I'll never see you again.
Well, that's good enough for me.
I hope I'm not intruding.
Go away. Please go away.
There, I know how you feel. Here, put your head on my shoulder and have a nice cry. It'll do you good. You're up to his old tricks again, eh? Well, that happens sooner or later, I suppose. Maybe now you realize what sort of a fellow he is. I don't know how you've stuck to him for so long. Upon the word, I don't...
I'd rather not talk about it if you don't mind, Mrs. Lloyd.
Nonsense, dear. Get it off your chest. It'll hurt no end.
Oh, it's awesome. It's sordid and terrible. I feel as though my whole life's been spoiled.
Get off with you, you're only a girl, yes? Why don't you just pack up your bags and go?
Well, I couldn't do that.
Of course you could. You're not dependent on him. He'd get your old bag, job back, couldn't you?
No. Well, no. We wouldn't want him anymore.
More fools than all I can say. Anyway, there's other job.
Well, it's too late now. We'll leave him.
Why not? He'll never bring you anything but misery.
I know that, but... Well, you see, I still love him.
What? The way he's treated.
I know it's foolish, but I just can't help it. I wouldn't really go on living without him.
The way things are, it seems to me it's pretty hopeless trying to live with him. Where's it all going to end?
I don't know.
If I was you, dearie, I'd wait until tomorrow morning when he's sober and then have the whole thing out with him.
Yes, I think I will.
Change the small things that decide our fate. Had Baker returned home that night, probably this whole story would have ended differently. But he didn't. By 10 o'clock the next morning, November the 10th it was, when he still hadn't arrived, Kitty Byron was desperate and hysterical. Hardly aware of what she did, she left the house and walked into Oxford Street. Outside a cutler shop, she stopped a minute and then turned and went in.
I want a knife, please.
Certainly, madam. What sort?
A folding one.
Ah, yes, yes, of course. Now, let me see now. Something after this style?
Yes. Yes, that'll do.
This lies 5 shillings, madam. We have a somewhat better quality.
No, no, that'll do.
Very good, madam. Then that will be 5 shillings, please.
Well?
Thank you. I'll just wrap it up.
It doesn't matter. I'll carry it with the children.
Yes, madam.
No, it isn't very big. I can carry it in my mouth.
Just as you say. Good morning, madam, and thank you for your custom. I hope we shall have the pleasure of it again. Well, walked off without a single word. Odd. Very odd, I call that.
From the cutler's shop, Kitty Byron went to the Lombard Street post office. He wrote a brief note addressed to Baker at the stock exchange and sent it off by messenger. Post office employers couldn't help noticing how distraught she was. The messenger returned with apologies. He was unable to find Baker. He sent him back again. About half an hour later...
I found him all right this time, miss. Here he comes now.
Thank you. That's your trouble.
Blimey.
Oh. There you are. Really, Kitty, this is too absurd. Dragging me away from the exchange like this. What on earth's the matter with you?
You didn't come home last night.
Suppose I didn't. Free to come and go as I please, all right?
I waited up all night for you.
More fool you.
I'm sorry if I behaved badly, Richie.
Well, there ain't a day to be sorry, don't you think?
What do you mean?
I mean, this is the end. I'll send a man this afternoon for my things.
You're not leaving?
Yes.
But, Richie, you can't.
Can't I? Oh, you just watch. The whole thing was a mistake from the start, surely you realize that by now.
What's going to become of me?
My dear girl, I'm the faintest idea, nor do I care.
You don't mean it.
Why shouldn't I mean it? We're through, Kitty. We were through months ago, and you didn't have the sense to realize it.
Well, oh. Oh, it's goodbye.
Yes. And as far as I'm concerned, good riddance.
Kitty. Kitty. What on earth? Put down that knife. Now, don't be a fool. Kitty, please. Listen to me. Help me, someone.
Goodbye. Reggie, goodbye.
I'm a murderer. Grab her. Murderer.
Now then, what's going on here? What's all this fuss about?
I killed him. Reggie!
Now then, take it easy. You better come along with me, young lady.
Well, there it was. Beautiful young woman, romantic name, cream passionnée. All the necessary ingredients. Little wonder that the newspapers devoted columns to the case, that on the day of the trial, the inadequate courtroom at Newgate was packed to suffocation, and that hundreds of people unable to get in waited outside to hear the result. Accolade was one of the shortest murder trials on record. The whole proceedings were got through in a matter of 3 hours or so, and there was only one possible verdict.
We find the prisoner guilty of murder as charged, with a strong recommendation to mercy.
Sentence of death was duly pronounced by Mr. Justice Darling, but not a person in the courtroom, least of all the learned judge himself, believed for a moment it would ever be executed, nor in fact was it. Thousands of people besieged the offices of Kitty Byron's solicitor, anxious to sign their names to a petition for reprieve. But it was never needed, for before it could be presented to the authorities, the Home Office had granted what it sought.